This is Grow in Grace, a daily teaching ministry of Palmetto Baptist Church in Greenville, South Carolina. God revealed wisdom for two groups of people in the book of Daniel. He inspired the author to write the book in two languages. God's wisdom to all nations and his wisdom directly to his people converge in chapter 7 with a vision of four beasts. Today, Pastor Sam will continue a sermon from Daniel chapter 7 titled, Thy Kingdom Come. Let's listen together so we can grow in grace.
Daniel is a book of wisdom for the nations, and it is a book of wisdom for his people. And right as we come to that divide where we move from the Aramaic part of Daniel to the Hebrew part, when we transition out of the wisdom to the nations to the wisdom for his people, there is a bridge, there is a hinge. And it's Daniel chapter 7. And that's what I want us to look at this morning. And as we look at Daniel chapter 7, and really as we look at a book like the book of Daniel, let me give you a little rule of thumb just to keep in your mind so that we don't get lost in all of those tantalizing details that have tended to divide God's people for centuries. I don't want our journey through the book of Daniel to divide us. I want our journey through the book of Daniel to encourage us. And so here's a little rule of thumb that we're going to keep, and that is this. We are going to identify the plain things and make them the main things. We're going to identify what the text plainly states, and those are going to be the main things that we're going to look at. So when we come to Daniel chapter 7, and we look at the text that Pastor Peter read for us this morning, and we're actually going to tack on verses 13 and 14 to sort of wrap up that first half of the chapter, there are five phrases that I think will help us identify the plain things so that we can keep them the main things in our understanding of this chapter this morning. And so if you look at the first eight verses, let your eye skim those verses. And the first phrase is this: there is a kingdom perspective. There is a kingdom perspective. What do I mean by that? Well, in these eight verses, we're going to have a panoramic view of something. And whatever it is we're looking at is going to be revealed at a unique time to a unique person in a unique way. And once we understand why this is being revealed, we're going to understand that it is speaking about a future day with remarkable accuracy. So when we think about a kingdom perspective, we're looking at a panoramic view of something. We're looking at something that goes way into the future. And what we're looking at are the kingdoms or the empires that begin with the one Daniel is in, Babylon, and literally go all the way to the end of the age. By the time you get to the end of chapter 7, you are all the way to the end of the age when a messianic champion is coming in glory and he is going to establish a kingdom that will never be replaced. And so the first eight verses are this panoramic view of what happens from Daniel's day all the way into the future beyond our day. So we're getting a panoramic view. It's revealed at a unique time. Notice the time stamp that we have in verse 1, in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon. Now, remember when we looked at chapter 6, we met Belshazzar. He was Nebuchadnezzar's grandson. He was an idolatrous, arrogant, proud, blasphemous king who took the vessels of God and used them to honor and celebrate lifeless idols. And in the middle of that celebration, God brought devastating judgment against him. And as you think about that, we note that the vision that we are getting in chapter 7 actually happened in the first year of his reign. So these visions are not sort of laid out in chronological order. They're grouped together. And that's because God is going to tell us a story about his people. Daniel is at the end of the Babylonian Empire. He is thinking about the fact that God told Jeremiah that there would be 70 years of captivity. He's done the math. He's been in Babylon about 70 years. By the time we meet him in chapter 6, you'll remember he's about 85 to 90 years old. So he's been living in Babylon for a long time. And as he does the math and as he looks at the scripture, he concludes that there is a great day coming for God's people in the very near future. The captivity will be over. The 70 years will be fulfilled. Surely this will be the time that God will return his people to the land. This will be the time that God will restore them to their former glory. This will be the time when all of the kingdom promises will be fulfilled. And then he gets this vision. And it becomes patently obvious to him that he has no idea what he's seeing. But what he does begin to understand is that the long-term fulfillment that he has been longing for and looking for and expecting to happen at the end of 7 years is actually going to be delayed. And it's troubling to him. So he gets this panoramic view at a unique time, and if anybody is going to get this vision and is qualified to receive a vision, it's Daniel. For 6 chapters, we have been watching this man, and we have noted, as have others in the texts that we've been reading, that God has gifted him with the unusual ability to have insight and wisdom into dreams and visions. And he has done this for the entire first half of the book. He has discerned visions from God that God gave to people that nobody else could discern. And so when he gets the vision in chapter 7, the vision in chapter 8, the vision in chapter 9, and the vision in chapter 10 and 11, we know that there is one person on the planet who has the ability and the wisdom and the insight to interpret what he is seeing, and it is Daniel. And so when he is concerned and confused, that's alarming to us. So this panoramic vision comes at a unique time to a unique person. And what makes it unique is that Daniel is going to see things that are in the future, but he's going to see those things at two levels. There are times in the vision when Daniel is going to be focused on things that are happening on earth. And then there are times when he's going to be focusing on things that are happening in another realm in heaven. And you see that right here in this chapter. Right in the text we read this morning, there are parts of the vision that deal with the things of the everyday part of life, what happens in the kingdoms of the world, and how that affects those who live in those kingdoms. And so as Daniel observes that, his attention is also drawn to a realm that you and I can't see without aid. We can't see that realm with an unaided eye. But Daniel is brought into that realm, and he gets to observe what is happening in that realm as they observe and respond to what is happening in the realm where Daniel lives. And so that's what's unique about these visions. Sometimes you're looking at one realm, and sometimes you're looking at another realm, and the transitions between the two are not always clear. And that's sometimes why we get confused. Now, when you think about this kingdom perspective that's panoramic in view and revealed at a very unique time in human history to a very unusual person, it is revealed for a future day. Throughout this part of the book, we are told that Daniel, the things you are seeing are for the time of the end. That shows up in chapter 8, verse 19. It shows up in chapter 8, verse 26. It shows up again in chapter 12, verse 4, and in verses 9 through 12. Daniel, what you are seeing is for the time of the end. In chapter 10, verse 14, God says to him, Daniel, this vision is for the days yet to come. And so whatever we're looking at, Daniel has been given a vision into the future about the end times. And so that's the kingdom perspective that I want us to keep in mind. And that brings us to the second phrase, and that is this. So what does Daniel see? There is an emphasis on seeing and beholding and looking. I mean, all through the chapter, 1, verse 1, 2, 5, 7, 8, 9, 11, and 13. All these verses have phrases like Daniel looked, or Daniel saw, or Daniel beholded or beheld something. And so there's an emphasis on seeing. So what did he see? And that brings us to that second phrase, and I'm going to call that phrase a sovereign directive. What Daniel is actually seeing in this section are four Gentile kingdoms that are described as hostile, ravenous beasts governed by 10 powerful rulers, energized and epitomized by one arrogant despot, but all of it is controlled by the sovereign God of heaven. So let me unpack that for us this morning as we look at this sovereign directive. Daniel declares in verse 2 and 3, I saw in my vision by the night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea, and four great beasts came out of the sea, different from one another. And I wrote down next to that verse, verse 17 of chapter 7. What are these great beasts? Well, look at verse 17. Daniel is told, these four beasts are four kings who will rise up out of the earth. So what Daniel is seeing in the first part of the vision, the interpretation given to him is that these beasts are four kingdoms who are ruled by men. And so what are these Gentile kingdoms that he's looking at? Well, the first one shows up in verse 4. And it's described as a lion with eagle's wings. We met this same image in the first half of the book. This is Babylon. And so the first kingdom that Daniel is exposed to that is like a great lion with eagle's wings, and the wings are plucked off, and it's lifted up from the ground and made to stand on 2 feet like a man, and a mind of a man was given it. That's the kingdom of Babylon. The kingdom that follows Babylon is the kingdom that came and destroyed Belshazzar. That's the kingdom of the Medo-Persians, and it's described as a ravenous bear. And you can see that in verse 5 of the text. I saw a second beast like a bear. It was raised up on one side. It had three ribs in its mouth between its teeth, and it was told, arise, devour much flesh. When the Medo-Persians came to power, there were three great kingdoms they destroyed. They destroyed the kingdom of Lydia in 546 BC. They destroyed the kingdom of Babylon in 539 BC. And we got a front row seat on the very night Belshazzar was slain by the Medo-Persians. And then the third kingdom that the Medo-Persians conquered was the kingdom of Egypt in 525 BC. It's likely that these are the three ribs that are in its mouth when it was told to arise and devour much flesh. But that kingdom is immediately followed by a third kingdom. And this kingdom is a leopard, and it's got four wings, and it's got four heads. And later in Daniel, we are told that this kingdom is actually the kingdom of Greece. After the death of Alexander the Great, there were four great generals who could not agree on who should succeed Alexander the Great. And so they murdered his young son, and they divided the empire into four parts. And so that's why you have this leopard with four heads and four wings. It's remarkably accurate to the kingdom that is coming in the future. And then the kingdom of Greece is eventually tumbled down and destroyed by a great kingdom that arose in its place, and that is the kingdom of Rome. And that kingdom is here in verses 7 and 8. And it's the fourth beast, and it's described as terrifying and dreadful and exceedingly strong. And so there are four Gentile kingdoms, and they are described as hostile, ravenous beasts. Now think about this for a minute. In chapter 2, which is sort of like the twin to this chapter, in chapter 2, we had the statue, and it had four parts. And each part was described as a metal. And it was given the image of the vision, the image in the vision was actually given human-like characteristics. And as we looked at that vision and we began to see the rest of the first half of the book, chapter 2 is describing kingdoms that God is using for his glory. Here in chapter 7, those same kingdoms are being described, but they're being described from a very different vantage point. They are being described from the vantage point of someone using those same kingdoms for his own evil purposes. Can you think of anybody in the Bible that is described as the God of this world? And he is energizing everything that happens in the world, or much of what is happening in the world. And so in chapter 2, we are looking at the kingdoms of the world from God's perspective and according to his purposes. And here in chapter 7, we are watching what happens when Satan energizes those kingdoms and uses them for his own purposes. They are hostile, they are ravenous, they are wicked. They ruthlessly stand against God, they stand against his people, and they even stand against one another. Now, these four kingdoms that we read about here are actually governed by 10 powerful rulers. These kingdoms are governed by rulers, and they're described as the 10 horns on the head of the fourth beast. A horn represents strength in the Bible. It represents power. And so these horns are 10 strong, powerful rulers who dominate the earth. And in this chapter, there are two ways of looking at those rulers. One of the ways, the general way, is to look at these kingdoms and to see the vast majority of their rulers as rulers that are being energized to do things that stand against God, to do exactly what we read about in Psalm 2 when we find the leaders of the nations raging against God. And so when you think about the rulers of the nations of the world, 10 is a number that represents completion. And so when you look at the whole picture and you see the rulers throughout the ages who have ruled the earth, the vast majority of them have not known the Lord, have not acknowledged the Lord, and have stood against God and against his purposes and against his people. And so when you look at the 10 rulers here in chapter 7, they speak about the general idea that the rulers of the empires of the world are not on God's side. But there's also a very specific reference about these 10, and we're going to find it out later in the book, that there are actually 10 literal kings that are going to operate in a confederation at the end of the age, just before Messiah comes back to establish his kingdom. And that's why I say you're looking at a vision, and Daniel is looking at a vision, and some of the vision is now, and some of the vision is later. And some of the vision is going to have a way of intersecting both near and far. And that's what we're seeing here. So you have these four empires that represent the empires of the world all the way up to the coming of Messiah, and they are ruled by powerful rulers who stand against God. But then there's another piece of information that is given. These rulers are epitomized in one arrogant, blasphemous ruler or despot, and he's described here in verses 8 through 11 as a little horn. Now, don't think little in terms of tiny, because when you read about this king, he is very powerful. His ability to govern is stunning. His military might is unstoppable, and his arrogance and his pride are beyond our comprehension. He literally puts himself in the place of God. And we know from the end of this section that he's human because he's executed. He's killed. So there is a human ruler coming who is going to stand against God. He's going to stand against anything that God sets forth. He's going to stand against God's Christ, and he's going to stand against God's people, and he's going to do it boldly and arrogantly. And what we're going to discover as we go through the book of Daniel, and we see collaborating evidence in the New Testament, that this man is the man Paul was talking about in 2 Thessalonians 3 when he describes him as the man of lawlessness. This is the man in Revelation 13, and again in Revelation 17, and again in Revelation 19, that is literally going to be energized by the dragon. He is going to be the dragon's champion. And so as we read about this little horn here in Daniel 7, that little horn is going to come ultimately in a human ruler at the end of the age who is going to ruthlessly persecute God's people. He is going to stand against God's kingdom, and he is going to do everything he can to oppose everything that God does and to oppose everything that God is. A literal person living at the end of the age. However, there are iterations of him in almost every empire. You could say it this way. There are prototypes of this evil ruler that go all the way back to Daniel chapter 6. In Daniel chapter 7, Daniel is receiving a vision, and the person who's sitting on the throne when he gets this vision in chapter 7 is an arrogant king named Belshazzar. And Daniel looked at Belshazzar and says to him, "You are without excuse because you knew what God showed your father, your grandfather, Nebuchadnezzar. You knew. You knew who God was. You knew what God was like. You saw God humble your grandfather. You saw your grandfather become converted and a follower of Yahweh. You knew all this, and in spite of knowing all this, you raised your hand up against God. You took his sacred vessels, and you actually committed sacrilege against the God of heaven." So there are iterations of that literal king that is coming at the end. There are prototypes all the way through. Belshazzar is one. We're going to meet another one in chapter 8, and then again in chapter 9, 10, and 11, named Antiochus Epiphanes, who lives 200 years after Daniel writes. You could put other names here. You could put Nero in the first century. You could put Hitler. You could put Stalin. These are just prototypes of the ultimate man of lawlessness that we are reading about here in Daniel chapter 7. And so there is this arrogant despot who controls the kings of the earth. But ultimately, all of this is not outside the control of the sovereign God of heaven. I mean, if you go back and read these verses carefully, you'll see that these nations are described as ravenous beasts, but things are being done to them. For example, look, if you will, at verse 4. The first was like a lion, and it had eagle's wings. Then as I looked, its wings were plucked off, and it was lifted up from the ground and made to stand. Somebody is doing that. Somebody is acting on this great lion. And then if you go to the next beast and you see the bear, somebody is telling the bear what to do. It was told, "Arise and devour much flesh." And then if you look at verse 6, the leopard, something was given to the leopard, dominion and power and authority.
Thank you, Pastor Sam. We'll continue this sermon next time on Grow in Grace. Today's speaker is Dr. Sam Horn. He's the pastor for preaching and vision at Palmetto Baptist Church. PBC meets at 2730 Anderson Road, Greenville, South Carolina. If you live locally, come join one of our morning worship services at 9 or 10:45 a.m. every Sunday. You can find us online at pbcpowdersville.org. If you have any questions about today's message or about Palmetto Baptist Church, reach out to radio@pbcpowdersville.org. Grow in Grace is recorded by the audio team at PBC and produced by CJ Billieu. Join us again next time so together we can grow in grace.